Good day, and welcome to episode 13 of the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour. I'm James Gordon, and I'm part of the team behind a weekly community gathering focused on raising awareness and sharing ideas about important issues that concern residents of Guelph and beyond. This week, we're talking about Guelph's quest for a new main library, some changes to the plans we've had come to council October 5th, and those of us who have been advocating for a new library that meets our future needs are concerned that these challenging times could cause further delays. Our guests for the September 17th, 2020 meeting were Chief Librarian Steve Kraft, Hina Mistry speaking as a library user and advocate, and a bevy of city councillors, Kathy Downer, Leanne Caron, Phil Ault, myself, and former councillor Carl Wetstein, as well as numerous folks on the call who offered their opinions. Dustin Brown was our moderator. Here we go.
Okay. So as Morgan is saying in the chat, we're back at it again. It was about a year ago now. Morgan's saying 1 year ago this week, actually, that I attended a council meeting on this library project, which ended in huge applause as council finally voted in favor of a development on Baker Street to build a fantastic new main library, among other pieces of development there. But we have some recent developments that we need to talk about, and we just want to get everybody up to speed on what's going on library-wise. Some people might argue that the pandemic has changed things, has changed needs, fiscal needs, community needs, et cetera, et cetera. But we might hear some different perspectives on that today. So our three guests on our panel this morning are Chief Librarian Steve Kraft. We have Councillor from Ward 5, Kathy Downer. And we have a familiar face to many of us, Hina Mistry, who is joining us as an advocate and user of libraries. So I think let's get right into it. Steve, if it's okay, I wanted to start with you and just ask kind of where are we now? What are the what's in the news with the library? Expand as much as you want on what you think of that.
Where are we now with the library? Gosh. Okay. Well, we've done a lot of work to date. I mean, since a year ago, the library board and library staff have been working towards, you know, an initial schematic design, and then we were trying to come up with a final schematic design for an 88,000 square foot library on what is, I guess, the north block of this particular property, that triangle-shaped parking lot, if I can call it triangle shape, behind BMO and behind the old post office, was divided into two pieces, so a north block and a south block, and the library was going to be situated, as I said, on the north block. And well, I guess it still is. I mean, there's still the potential for that. With a 10-story residential unit on top of it. There'll be another tower on the south, and then there was supposed to be some institutional or some commercial or educational space on the south block. And whether or not that's going to come to fruition, well, I guess will depend on a city council discussion on October 5th. But as you can see, or what you've read in the newspaper, there is a proposal by city staff to sort of redesign that piece of property. They would like to move the library to the south block. And I guess it would maybe stretch from the corner of that, right behind the, I guess it would stretch from church to church when you're thinking about it. I mean, on Chapel Lane there. Ideally, or in this particular scenario, it would be a 3 or 4 story building, which would, in theory, yes, be more efficient. It's certainly more manageable from a library staffing point of view. I mean, it's easier to manage, you know, a building, a standalone building. We're told that we should be able to find some efficiencies there. I think the challenge with that plan A, as I'm going to call it, was because we were sitting underneath a tower, structural support for that tower would have to come through the library, and we're causing some design challenges, okay, which perhaps we're maybe pushing up the cost of that particular facility, whether or not, I mean, we didn't have any final costing, but that was potentially the issue anyway, costing there. As I say, a standalone building makes it much more unique for us in that sense, I guess. So that's where we are to date, I think. We need to have some more discussions about how the library feels about that, how City Council feels about that, and I guess how the community feels about it. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say about this particular scenario.
Okay, fantastic, Steve. I guess the other development that we've heard about is a lack of federal funding. Maybe Councillor Downer, you can talk about what's happening there, and also how to what level the decision made last year by council was dependent on this federal funding that was aspired to achieve.
Thanks, Dustin. Hi, everybody. Thanks for inviting me this morning. Actually, the last September when we made that decision, the funding was not the funding for the library was not predicated at all on that receiving that. It would have been nice, and it was certainly one of the directions we gave. It was for staff to go ahead and apply for that. People were throwing around numbers like we thought we might be able to get $7 million out of that. There is development charges assigned to this project. I think it's somewhere in the area of $14 million that would be going to the library. And also, that doesn't mean we can't apply for future grants. So that was one pocket of the federal infrastructure grants that was to do with culture. There still is the other envelope of money that we can apply for as well. So there's other funding that can be applied for. We may or may not get that. But also the library had intended, once you have a decision made, I mean, a lot of money is fundraised for these types of project as well. In other major cities and other cities, there's been a fairly robust fundraising campaign as well. But we can't even get to the point of a decision at this point. So it's been a saga for the last, since 1995, the history, and we had a decision once before and that got set aside. And then for me, it feels frustrating because it's like all these hoops. So even when I came back on council in 2014, the library was in limbo then, and we brought forward a chronology of all the stuff that had been done. And even since that time, there's been another 6 studies done on this project, business cases. Well, I listed them. I think I said all the hoops at that meeting, the couple of functional plans update, the community impact report, economic, social, cultural assessments. No other project in this city has had to do that. The South End Library, South End Rec Center, is based on the 2009 strategic plan for culture. So it's it had nothing to do with the federal funding, that motion. It was the $67 million was approved, and there was going to be a levy phased in over 3 years. The total was 0.6% over the 3 years that would be phased in, but that didn't just include the library, that included all the other major projects. So there's $100 and some million operations facility that is in that as well, that nobody's talking about. You can probably hear my frustration. I don't know. Did you want to hear some thoughts, Dustin, about my thoughts on this new location of the library?
Absolutely.
Okay. So when I first heard about this, I thought, oh no, it's the back alley, and I've had some conversations with Steve about this, and I understand the benefit of a standalone library. I do. I think that, it saves a lot of that. We possibly may not have to acquire, those other properties. There's savings there. There's certainly the design of trying to put it under an apartment building was adding to the cost. So I think those are all positive. So that's positive for the library. However, it's not necessarily positive for the downtown, because the library in that location where it was going was to be that anchor at that end. And we all know what's happening at that end of the downtown. And so that's, we lose that. So we still have to resolve that. And having said that, the old Eaton Center, Quebec Street, was supposed to be the anchor for that center. And that hasn't happened. I mean, that I wouldn't call Quebec Street any kind of an anchor for the downtown. It may help that. And there could be, through urban design, there could be a way of making Baker Street a much more attractive street than it currently is. Certainly Douglas Street is a back street and it's very attractive. We need to do some beautification in that whole area if that happens, from my perspective. Is it ideal? No. Could it work in a lot of ways? Yes. So I haven't made up my mind yet. I need to hear the discussion. And I think getting the library through in early October is our biggest challenge, however it comes. And we really need the support of everybody here and across the city to come out, to delegate, to write, and for this important project. So we know how important they are. Milton has done some great work on, we need to convince people. I know I'm talking to the converted here, but they have some great stats that they got from Martin Prosperity Institute. Like $1 invested in the Milton Public Library is $7.73 in value. It generates 3,455 indirect benefits every hour that it's open, and the value of a library membership is $510 a year, and that's gone up every year since they've had the library. And it has a $32 million economic value. And others have used this, and that the numbers are very similar. So I'm talking to the converted here, but I think we have a very, very important decision again on the library in the beginning of October, and we need help.
Okay. So thanks, Councillor Downer. We're definitely going to come back to talking about the Committee of the Whole meeting in October, because people are wondering what to expect out of it. But first, mm-hmm. I want to give Hina a chance to speak on the issue a bit. Hina, you wrote an editorial that was submitted to the Mercury, I think, not too long ago. I was wondering if you could tell us all what sparked that for you, to write that editorial, and if you can summarize the argument that you made in it as well, that'd be great.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody. And thanks, Steve and Kathy, just for talking a little bit more about, what exactly the project of this new library is going to entail and all the work that's gone into trying to make this happen. Speaking to the converted, I am converted. I've spent the past, 7 years of my life literally reading my way through 13 different libraries and archives across 5 different countries as part of my research as a professional historian. And I think, yes, I grew up using the Guelph Public Library and its different branches, but I think that, the opportunity to see what libraries are in several different places has really informed my opinion about what they bring to, to a city, what they bring to a community, and also what happens when you don't invest in them, right? So, my experience with libraries has sort of ranged between, the dusty room of the Gandhi Luthuli Documentation Center in Durban to this efficient, beautiful and versatile British Library. I think it's one of the most, wonderful libraries in the entire world, to the Nehru Memorial Museum and Library in India, in Delhi, which is protected by security guards and has this intricate obstacle course of bureaucracy to just get in. But it's still accessible to the public. So I think, you can tell a lot about a place from what its libraries are like. And I think that if we think about, okay, what do good libraries bring to a place? If I think about the British Library, the British Library is one of the few places in central London where you can go and not spend any money, you can just exist, right? And in a time where we're going through, an economic crisis, a public health crisis, an educational crisis, I don't understand why it would make any fiscal sense. And I'm really sorry that we have to sort of talk about these terms in this, these projects in this way. But if you want to think about what concrete value libraries bring to a place, you know, they are helpful in helping people save money. They help people access. They can provide a meeting place for friends, for classmates, for researchers, for sharing ideas. And, you know, they are one of the most welcoming places that we can see in the city. Unlike a bar, unlike a restaurant, you know, they're not going to turn you away because you didn't have enough funds, right? So I think the more that we invest in those kinds of places in downtown, those welcoming, community-oriented, caring kind of places, I think the better it is for all of us. And again, like with the British Library too, I went, you know, in the council meeting that happened last year, the people talked about the Halifax Library. There's the Vancouver Public Library. You know, it's a space where it attracts visitors locally, you know, regular local visitors, but it also draws in people from outside of our community. It's a place to go. It's a place to see, you know? So I think that what could we possibly lose in investing in something like this is one of the reasons why, you know, I think it was what drove me to write this thing. It's like, I've seen the clear benefits of this working in many different places around the whole world. So, and then the second reason why, you know, I think, again, like one, the arguments for revamping the main branch of the library have a lot to do with the way that staff can actually work in the library. Like, can our staff supported? Can staff do the best job that they can to, you know, to be librarians, to do the work that they do? And I've seen examples in which, you know, maybe a library was not funded properly, or, you know, what happened to a place when they didn't get the tool and staff didn't get the tools that they needed to properly like operate a library or work, you know, long-term. So for example, I mentioned like the Gandhi Luthuli Documentation Center in South Africa. So I was researching the history of racial segregation policies in South Africa, and I visited this tiny little library, which it's based in university, but it's like open to anybody. So it's basically based at the University of KwaZulu-Natal's Westville campus, which was one of the first universities that admitted non-white students under apartheid. And it's about the size of like two or three classrooms. So it's really tiny, and it holds some of the most important records of Indian activism against racial discrimination in the country. And, you know, there were two dedicated staff who did the best that they could with the resources that they had to share and preserve the material. They welcomed researchers, whether they were academics or community members wanting to know more about their family history. The South Africans Truth and Reconciliation Commission like has a reparations process by which you go to the like archives and libraries and things, and you know, you can find information that will help you build a reparations case. So again, if we're going to think about what does this mean to you know, to BIPOC folks in the city, I think, you know, we need to preserve, you know, preserve these kinds of things. So again, like these two librarians, like they, you know, they shared their knowledge of the collection with visitors. They did whatever they could to help people find what they needed. They looked after material, which includes original documents, old fragile books. But they were limited in how much they could help users. And they often compromised their health and safety because, you know, again, it didn't necessarily have as much funding as it could have. And there were like rodent droppings littering the shelves and like insects eating through pages of the old books. This building that I'm talking about in South Africa, it's about the same age, I think, as the main branch of the like Guelph Public Library. And I think similarly, like if we think about it, that's there, but here, like in Guelph, staff at the main branch, they look after all the microfilm and physical records of our history here. They help visitors navigate them. When I read on Bill Hewlett's website that when the Guelph Mercury closed, the Guelph Public Library took in the stranded collections. You know, we cannot rely solely, anyone who makes this argument about digital, you know, we don't need a physical library because the digital age, it's just makes no sense to me. We can't rely solely on digitally storing our history. There are high costs involved in digitizing, storing, and sharing all the material that makes up our shared past. And we need to give staff who take care of our physical history the tools that they need and guarantee them also a safe work environment when doing their important work. So I guess if I was to wrap this up, I would say that, you know, libraries are welcoming and inclusive spaces. Again, they won't turn you away for lack of funds. Let's not do the same to the library. A healthy library provides and cares for a community, especially its most vulnerable. And while our community is, again, facing a public health crisis, an economic crisis, and a public education crisis all at the same time, funding a library is the only way that we can get through this. So that's what I would have to say about this.
Great. I'm seeing applause from our Zoom crowd, Hina, so congrats on that. Now, I want to ask just a couple of our questions that were submitted in advance, but first I'm going to go to Phil and then James, who want to chime in with questions or comments. So Phil, you're first.
Okay, thanks very much, Dustin. Initially, I was just going to pose this to Kathy Downer, but I think it probably would be worthwhile to hear from Steve Kraft as well. I'm having some problems with the issue of federal funding, per se. It strikes me that this is a bit of a red herring, that the building that we had initially approved was not contingent upon on this at all. And I think that this provides, unfortunately, a bit of an out for people that want to promote this red herring as being a foundation for underfunding the library. So that's the first part of the question. But this also leads to a couple of other issues as well. And that is the library potentially being positioned independently on Baker Street, which I actually think has some really, really strong points to it. I think it gets it out from under the notion that it has to be tied to a corporate development, whether it's a P3 or something else. And I think that's very, very positive. I think it can also be a part of the improvement of Baker Street, which has been a bit of a dead zone. But as Kathy said, it's going to need a fair bit of work to do that. And the other nice thing, I like the idea of it being there because it historically fits with the old Guelph Curling Club, which is the second oldest in Canada and was located on that site. So we preserve a heritage site that's now a parking lot. The last point, and this is a huge question now, but the last point is I struggle with the idea that the library should ever have been an economic stimulus for Wyndham Street, because that allows for the library, if that argument falls through, and that allows for people to actually remove their support for it. And the problem for me is just simply this. It seems that no other major project, except maybe a parking garage, carries with it this particular tag. The equipment center does not carry with it that. The South End Rec Center doesn't carry that. So as soon as we lose that frame, we can look at the library for what I think is most important, that it's a standalone institution that's important to the city as it stands. And so, as I said, it's a huge question, but it's one that I think is really important. Is the funding coming from the federal government a red herring? And have we gone down accidentally a bad road by saying that this must help for the economic improvement of the north end of Wyndham Street?
You know, I think, Phil, I think you're right in a lot of ways that, you know, these studies were all requested, you know, by council, a number of them, the economic, social, and cultural assessment and business cases. These are things that council wanted the library to go through. And you're right, it should just be a standalone. It should be like the South End Rec Center, where they haven't requested anything, the same people, and it has a similar price tag. So mind you, a lot of that's covered by development charges, but I mean, it's still a price tag. And I think while certainly when the report came out in September and we had the discussions at council, there was not it would be nice to get that money, and they brought forward the report from the feds. It was never that we had to have that money to move forward, because that the funding plan was never not based on having that federal funding. What you're right, and what and then another way, in that those that are now speaking, you know, negatively about moving forward are using that as and ones that didn't support it in September, like the mayor, are now using that, it appears, to come up with, oh no, we can't move forward with this now, or it can't be more than 50 million, and all of this. That's the excuses that they're giving now. But you know, libraries, that's sort of the one part that we don't need the economic development. But when you're planning for a library, though, I think in a downtown and a main library, the location of it matters and can be tied into economic development, which is important because of the amount of people that a library will draw. So when you look at the location in Guelph, and you think of a bigger downtown design, you wouldn't put all of your major assets in one place, you'd sort of spread them out. So there is that rationale, but maybe that the city has relied too heavily on trying to make that case. And we may have been backed into a corner and sort of forced to make that case as well. But I'll let, maybe Steve might have more to say about that too.
After I listen to you guys talk, Steve has a lot of things to say about a lot of things, okay? But nevertheless, you're right. I think there are some red herrings out there, and some of those people who don't want to support the library have certainly locked into those red herrings and maybe expanded on them too. I would like to, there's a lot of misinformation out there, I think. And I mean, this forum here allows us to sort of vent on some of those things. But nevertheless, I think we should get some of the true information out there. To Phil's point about an economic driver, I mean, I don't think that is that's not the primary reason for building a new library, right? But nevertheless, there are success stories going back as early as, 20 or 25 years ago when Seattle Public Library built their library. There was certainly a lot of economic spin-off, a lot of
When does yes mean yes? I've been on the board, library board, 6 years. Every year there's some vote that we celebrate on the board and go, okay, there, we've passed that hurdle, as Kathy called them. We've already approved this library. So, but there's a general perception that that's not the case. And at budget time in October, we're going to be debating whether we're even getting a library or not. So that's Kathy's frustration. That's a lot of our frustrations. But how do we get past that? So it feels like we have, and yet there are some forces at play that will use every year a different opportunity to drive a different political narrative. And I would love to come into those meetings in October saying, yes, we're choosing between option A and option B about the library. That's all that meeting is set up to do. But Steve, you're probably as aware as anybody that that's probably not what the meeting's going to end up being about. So as speaking to the converted, how do we drive that message home that it's already approved, it's a go, there's a need, there's funding that we can find. I had a meeting with Lloyd Longfield last week who said that funding was, the federal was all lined up. It was the provincial that wasn't playing along, and they were doing that because of their political narrative.
Yeah, I worry about the provincial sabotage of this, like involved in this in Guelph, but I won't go there. Just about whether it was approved, that it, you know, the motion was that the following public components of the Baker Street redevelopment project be approved and that staff be directed to incorporate the following costs in the capital budget and forecast to allow detailed design to proceed. And that was the whole site remediation, the urban square and street scape construction, and a public library construction cost to a maximum of $67.1 million, inclusive of a capital funding strategy that requires an estimated 0.86% increase to the property tax levy. So there's been approval. We've approved the 88,000 square feet. If somebody on the October councillor comes up and says, no, I want to make it 50 million. It would require, I believe, a reopening, though I'd have to check with the clerk on that. And I think anything of a lower square footage may require that as well. Though it's been approved, but it's been approved before. Like for me, it's like, oh, we did this in 2003. It was actually approved to go ahead to purchase the post office, and the project was 20 million then. Of course the next council came in and threw the project out, and now we are here. We are $67 million later. Was there another question?
I think Kathy, do you mind, Dustin, if I?
Yes. Yeah.
It's more of a question to my colleagues, but also something that the public, I think. This is a huge eye-raising in that you brought that up, Kathy, and I'd been thinking about that, is that since there's a council motion on the books to build a 90,000 square foot library for $67 million, if we wade into any discussion about undoing that motion, it is a motion of reconsideration and requires a two-thirds vote of council, which gives me hope because you know, we may have a 7-6 vote on the relocation. We may have a 7-6 vote on allocating, setting staff to look at the south side of the site. But I don't think we'll get 2/3 to reopen the square footage or the funding. So from a governance perspective, I think you're right, Kathy. I think it requires reconsideration. And we need to get our hands up quick if we head in that direction.
Can I throw one brief financial comment in from an ex-councillor?
Who's that? I recognize the face.
Yeah, good. The name is anonymous. I was on the committee that Kathy reported to, which made a decision. And after the election, which was a month later, the next council shot everything down. I think we have to be careful on the funding side as it relates to the decision side. We've made, as somebody pointed out, 6 decisions to build a library and identify both design and cost. But the fundamental roadblock that I don't have an answer to, I wish I could help with this, is that council always has the final right at point of deciding the final funding is the basis of proceeding with the building. That has killed this library 6 times. I hope it doesn't kill it again. But it's really important that we separate the issue of decision to build versus the decision to fund. Because without the decision to finally fund and the identification of those funds, the decision to build has very little weight.
That's, you know, and Carl's absolutely right. So we can not get a reopening or if somebody tries to make it less in the beginning of October, if somebody tries to do that. But once we get to the budget, you might find that, and you would need that supermajority for that. However, once you get to budget, councillors may not support that. However, other councillors may not, there are councillors that wouldn't even support the 50 million, I can tell you. So what they would have trouble with then is the majority of council not supporting the budget and never coming to a decision. And we try that tactic, like that happened in that council as well, where, you know, some of them realized that they'd cut too much from the budget. And this was in the Craig Quarry term. And that even, you know, the progressive part of the council would not support the budget, who they have relied upon to support the budget every year so that they could say, well, I didn't support the budget. And once they heard that we weren't supporting it, and then there was others that would never support a budget, the other side had to come up with some kind of a solution. So it was an interesting dynamics at budget when these projects come forward. And this could be like that. So Carl is right. We could do all kinds of things in October if there are councillors that would not, you know, who want to try to reopen this issue. But when we come to budget, it's only a majority of council, and we could lose out then as well. So it's people think that, oh, I'm coming forward, I'm delegating, and you know, it's, you know, oh, good, we survived that vote. But then nobody shows up at the budget time to do a lot of delegating, and we sort of need to make sure that's happening as well, depending on what's happening in October. I mean, if we don't have to buy those other buildings, or if that kind of a design thing happens, if there are savings within the structure, it may satisfy some of those councillors that sort of are sitting on the fence. I don't know.
Well, one more comment, if I might. The good news is this is not a supermajority vote. We have made the vote to proceed with the library. So it's a budget vote as to whether we're prepared to support the funding. That's a 7-6 vote. So if you get this project to the budget based on the decision having been made, no reopening required, you need only 7 councillors to vote for a budget to build a library. So I think the supermajority thing can confuse things a little bit if we take it out of context. Sorry about that. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
No problem. Thank you, Carl. With all these, you know, this new plan to go into a standalone library as opposed to one that's at the base of a building, I saw a few people in the chat who were bringing up the question, is a standalone library easier to axe if it is separate from the rest of the development? So, of course, we know that Windmill has a lot of private investment, and that has to do with the housing development and the other aspects of what's going on with this plan. But I think people want to know, would it be easier in theory for a standalone library to be forgotten about and the rest of the development to proceed?
I'm just going to start by saying I think there's huge risk there. I mean, I think the development Baker District project was supposed to include a library. So if you subtract the library from that, it becomes a different development. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's what I'm hearing too from the councillors, is the library was part of the vote.
There was a motion when we went out for the RFP that it was added on that it had to include a library. this whole development. Actually, I just, if the library came out of it, I would not support the Baker Street development.
Dustin, let me weigh in a little bit on that one, because I think it is incredibly important that it, as much as I have real concerns about the library being considered an anchor for economic development, I can tell you that it is an anchor for residential development. If we really want to look truly at developing downtown residency for people, we have to accept that we need to have the facilities there that will attract people. Hell, the reason we're building a South End Rec Center is so that people will feel that they have some community foundations. So as a consequence of that, the library becomes imperative to downtown residential development, and most importantly, development on the Baker Street property itself.
Just adding to what Phil said, I think what we have to remember, it's not just a main branch, a hub for the city. The library, downtown library, services the whole downtown community, right out to, you know, quite a bit outwards, like the whole university neighborhood. There's, you know, another branch up until Scottsdale. So it's not just a main hub for administration and all of that. It has a much bigger function. And the downtown area does not have a rec center. We've got these West End, East End, South End rec centers, and you know, we've lost the pool now at Centennial, but there is no rec center at all in the downtown area. So it's an important place, is an important function that way as well. It's a cultural center, but it's for the downtown, as people living in the downtown as well.
Could I add something as well? For anyone who didn't read the article I wrote, so at the very beginning of the letter to the editor, I mentioned that, you know, I had recently met somebody who she had chosen, you know, she was from, I think she had like worked in Toronto, she had like worked in, she was from, I think, London, Ontario, but she had chosen Guelph as the place that she was going to live out her retirement. And, you know, when she was deciding on a place to live, she pointed out, okay, well, where's the main branch of the library? Because that's where a lot of the programming is going to be. So let me draw a 30-minute walking radius around it and pick a house that I can, you know, try and find a house that I can afford that's close to it. Because for her, like, it was really important to be connected to, like, you know, to be connected to the library programming, that is, you know, that is a way in which she could sort of live out her retirement in an affordable, community-engaged way. So I think, again, like, there's that human side to it as well, right?
I want to get to another of the advanced questions that were submitted. This one from Susan Watson. Are we expecting any sort of official public engagement from the city, any public consultation with the proposal to change the plan? Or is it, too late in the game for that, considering we have a meeting on October 5th to talk about it?
I would say I'm not sure. We'll have to wait and see what the motions say, but certainly we had a lot of public engagement in the previous urban design, and I would expect that if the council decides to move the library to that spot, that there needs to be a whole new design in the downtown, and it should have public engagement.
I'll say I don't know if there's official public engagement versus I think we're perhaps planning, don't hold me to this, but maybe an information session to share some of our thoughts as well. So stay tuned for that if it happens somewhere before or after the 5th. I'm not sure yet.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely, Steve. Let us know and we can promote it to our group. Sort of tying into that, Susan Ratcliffe, you were bringing up an anti-library petition that's making the rounds and has somewhere in the ballpark of, I heard, under 2,000 signatures. What's something that pro-library advocates could do to counter the influence that petition might have?
Yeah, and I don't know if it's even worth talking about. I only came across it this week. I didn't realize, of course, I wouldn't have been on the mailing list for that that Change Now petition. So I didn't know if everybody else was aware of it. There's nowhere on in that petition that you can comment. You're full of it. But I just wondered if there's any point in worrying about it.
Yeah. Dustin, I, I could speak to that because I learned a good lesson from that experience. I was very alarmed when I saw the petition. Leanne, Kathy, Phil, you were all on my alarm list, and I was given the good advice to ignore it. Scott Butler, the chair of our library board, dug in and found that he was surprised that quite a few people who live in Lebanon were concerned about our downtown library. it's hard to take it seriously. Yeah, that's always our choice. Do we give it more credence by paying attention to it, or do we give it what it deserves and ignore it? I don't quite know the answer to that.
So. I was going to say, cynical me likes to ignore petitions. I mean, we'll ask Kathy. I'm looking at Kathy right now. Do city councilors actually pay attention to petitions? I don't know.
Actually, I don't think we can receive petitions right now. Can we? Isn't there I saw something recently about that we can't receive online petitions. There was something recently about that. Maybe Leanne can, but certainly, and the petition just said, do we need a $67 million library? I mean, and that's the whole issue I had when the mayor made this announcement about not getting federal funding. And no other information was provided about the library, the process, anything about about the main branch. The only thing that's being getting thrown out there is the price tag. So yeah, it's pretty easy to say, yeah, no, I don't want a $67 million library. Like it's without any kind of context or background or being part of a Baker Street district, or it's so easy to sign those petitions. I really think we should just ignore it. I don't think it's really relevant at all.
Yeah. Just like Kathy, I absolutely summarily reject petitions. I question their veracity. A letter, I think, is a legitimate approach to lobbying. A delegation clearly is, and I am quite happy to engage in phone conversations with anyone. But to coin a phrase or to corrupt Mark Twain, which is probably a good thing to do when we're talking libraries, there are lies, there are damned lies, and then there are petitions. And Scott Butler is quite correct. As much as I'm sympathetic to people in Lebanon not having their own facilities, if somebody from Lebanon signed a petition in Guelph, I'm going to question the validity of the petition in whole. It's just not valid to me.
Adding that to what Phil said about the letters, I mean, through that whole social media thing that the mayor initiated on the library, and there was, you know, hundreds of comments around the library. In that whole thing, I got only two letters saying not to approve the $67 million library. So people didn't even know where in those letters. I only got two negative ones. I got about half a dozen positive ones for the library. But in the two negative letters I received, they didn't even know where we were in a process. They didn't know that this had already been approved. So, I mean, I think we counselors need to pay attention more to people who actually write letters and who show up at council to speak, to really get a better gauge of what's going on out there.
Well, I generally agree. Letters and emails and phone calls are far more powerful than a petition. I don't think we can discount a petition entirely. A legitimate petition does have influence, and even a petition that isn't legitimate, that's just done online and anybody can sign from any country. What that does is it emboldens a counselor's position, that they will say at a meeting, you know, thousands of people have signed a petition in opposition of the library, and they'll use that in a narrative that frames their point of view. So we have to be prepared to counter that. And James, thank you for looking it up and sourcing where the petition came from and where the signatures are coming from, because then we can refute it and say, you're using a petition that doesn't have any legitimacy to support your position. Dismiss the petition at that point. But I don't think we can just say that all petitions don't have any influence, because I don't think that's true.
If I may, Dustin, the petition and things like that have already been unfortunately successful, because it's changed the discussion to being about money And already earlier today, we've heard from Hina and Steve and everyone about how our library is a social need. It's a community necessity. However, when the topic gets to just talking about the money, do we want to make that investment now? We have to play that same game. I don't like playing the game, but we have to have legitimate responses to it from an economic standpoint. And it's right there in the chat. And what Steve said, put a dollar into a library, you get five or seven back in the community. People don't like to hear that. And people don't understand it either. We have to really strengthen that, those kinds of economic driver arguments. I had someone write me and say, well, I didn't think overdue fines were that high. How are we going to get $7 back for every dollar we invest?
I mean, I think though that that's, sorry, like that it's those kind of assumptions that maybe need to be addressed more, because like, I mean, that's just reality. A lot of people don't understand how like the library works, like how it's funded, like how the main, you know, the central branch like helps all the other branches, like those kind of nitty gritty details don't, like a lot of people might not know all that. So I'm wondering if, you know, like we're talking really high level here, but even, you know, like how does the library, as you know, an institution, kind of like help people in need, you know, when we're talking about, oh, you know, like let's, I'm trying to save you money, you know, I'm protecting your, you know, protecting our budget, like whatever. But then it's, you know, like understanding how like that it's not actually the case. Like I think that those, like how it affects actual users needs to be, and what are like the consequences of not doing it. I feel like that maybe needs to be more central to the discussion, because otherwise, I don't know, it's just going to fly over people's heads, I think.
I think Hina's on to something. And I'm sorry to interject again. I know I'm not on the panel, but I think Hina's really onto something. And that is, you know, in your introductory remarks, Hina, you were telling powerful stories of how a library impacted you. That has so much value. I think we need to get people out there holding up their library card, posting a selfie, Twitter, Facebook, IG, everything, everyone putting up, I'm a library card holder. We have 54,000 library card holders. Have kids, you know, blank out their name. This is my library card, and hold up a book that they read at the library. Have people tell their impact stories. That is really powerful. How did a library affect me? My favorite library memory, or I remember when I was a kid and I went and did this at the library. I think those stories of impact have way more power than any signature and any economic argument about how much it costs.
Yeah, I'll say as an activist and organizer too, when you're trying to find a meeting space for, you know, 10 to 20 people, the library space is one of the more affordable out there, unless you just want to go to a pub, which also works most of the time. A question about process, because I've been seeing in the chat something about buying properties back in 2017, why that hasn't happened yet. And I think it was Susan Watson and Morgan Hanna who were bringing that up. I wondered if either of you could flesh that question out.
Well, the purchase of properties is an in-camera discussion, so we can't really say much publicly about it, but those two properties have not been purchased. So that kind of speaks for itself, that there's, you know, been some difficulty in acquiring those properties. Yes, money was set aside. There are other properties that were purchased, and one has been turned into a parking lot temporarily. All I can really say is that we haven't purchased the other ones yet.
I'm not on council, so I can tell you something that wasn't in camera about the purchase of properties. We made a decision 10 years ago to purchase four or five properties, and I think the ones we're talking about are ones that aren't quite complete. This has nothing to do with just the library. This was all around the entire Baker Street development, and hopefully we would have as a major anchor a library. So I think the purchase of the properties could become a red herring if it isn't understood in the context that whether there's a library or not, those properties have to be dealt with.
Susan, do you want to jump in?
Mm-hmm. So I guess my question is, so I was looking back at I was looking back at the Collins Barrow report, and I guess I really want to underline that City Council went out to the private sector and they said, what is the interest in developing downtown properties by the private sector? And they weighed in, they spent their valuable time, and the Baker Street District was the number one choice of moving ahead for development in the downtown. So it was actually City Council and Economic Development that initiated that process. I guess my question is, and in that same council document, it said that money was approved in 2017 to acquire those other two properties. So why did we go forward with an RFP to the private sector for a design that included those two properties if we didn't own them yet?
That's it for today. Thanks as always to our guests and to the Breezy Breakfast team of Phil Ault, Dustin Brown, Tanya Givert, Tina Mistry, Sequoia Kim, and our many supporters who gather every Thursday at the unkind hour of 8 a.m. Music for the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour is by Jules Germ. If you'd like to join us in one of our live Zoom sessions, or you have any questions, email me, James Gordon, at james@jamesgordon.ca. If you'd like to support the work that we do on this program, please visit patreon.com and look for Breezy Bullhorn. Thank you, as always, for listening.